The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for entertainment and educational purposes only.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Welcome to Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson, Jordan Peters, and Scott McNally, part of the Advices Radio Network, a new voice in bodybuilding podcasting.
Welcome back to Muscle Minds, the presentation of Advices Radio, and it's brought to you by trainedbyjp.com and fortitudetraining.net. Jordan, I have a question for you before we get started here. By the way, this is Jordan Peters and Dr. Scott Stevenson. I'm with you as always. Jordan, what is it like to hold a 210-pound dumbbell in each hand, 420 pounds total, and press those things?
They were like a circus act. It was just impossible to balance.
Dude, they looked so huge.
Yeah.
It was. I rewatched the video back, and before I even pressed, I was holding them at the bottom for 7 seconds.
Whew.
It was a 7 second ISO hold before I did the first rep, just to get them balanced, ready to press. It was bollocks. Once I got them in line, they felt really easy to press.
Yeah,
that was cool. So strength and power wise, that was a breeze. So if they were like compact, I could have probably got 5 or 6 reps on those.
I could tell. I could see the control you had balancing them on the negative of the rep.
Yeah, like you right still, there. You had to do the negative on the second rep was like a 4 second negative, and then like another like 3 second pause at the bottom again. So I think my time under tension was about 20 seconds total, 2 reps.
Whew.
Yeah, could have done 6 reps if you didn't have to balance.
Yeah, precisely. It's cool. One of my friends has already messaged me with some compact 200-pounders.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to get those, and I should be able to have some fun with those.
I got another solution for you, too.
What's that?
Get an Olympic dumbbell handle set.
Yeah, but then the problem with those is that when you load it up with pens, it then changes the depth of the dumbbell.
Yeah, there are issues, but you don't load with the tens, you load with the quarters.
Sorry, 25. Sorry, tens here would be...
Oh, 10 kilos, yeah, right, yeah. Right, yeah, exactly.
But even still, that changes the depth a little bit.
It does, yeah. It does. It solves one problem and causes another, you're right.
Yeah, but it does, because I'm used to pressing to that depth. If mm-hmm. I then press to a different depth, it would probably throw me off a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And hopefully, the compact 200-pounders will feel quite nice.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I look forward to seeing that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'm pretty sure I better get that. It's about 10 reps on those, I think.
Nice. It's insane, man.
That would be awesome. That makes it even more impressive the way Ronnie handled those 200-pounders.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's just unbelievable. Because he just like manhandled them. Like, with
a smile on his face.
There's a video floating around of Rami doing the 200-pounders, but he picks them off the rack himself, puts them under his knees, presses them, then puts them back onto his knees and puts them back on the rack.
Good gym etiquette.
That's when you're fucking strong.
Exactly.
That's just what the fuck.
Right. That's like driving by an accident and someone stuck in the ditch and you say, "Oh, just allow me to pull you out of the ditch." You just reach over and grab their car, pick it up, put it on the road, go back in your car and wave goodbye. Put a smile on your face.
And that's why he's he's the biggest at the moment because he's so damn strong.
Yeah.
But they've kind of got like a governor on him in that oxygen. They don't really let him do that. The video where he did that was where he was training at a gym in America. Because they wouldn't let him do that shit out there.
They're scared he's going to tear something.
Yeah, but it's because they just make him do tons of volume, so he's just fatigued.
Yeah.
Right.
So he's doing like 4 sets of 12. So he would do like 160s, then the 170s, then the 180s. Like, So by the time he gets to do like the 190s, he's fucking tired.
You know, Jordan, that kind of brings up a question for me. You know, I've been, you know, I listen to everything you guys say, and I have been logging my lifts, and I've been working on progressive overload. Now I have a couple lifts that are my favorites, in particular on chest day. When I start my workout out with this particular press, it's a like a cable machine free motion press, and with my bicep tendon, whatever the angle is, it works perfectly for me, and I can lift heavy and I can get brutal with it. Now,
that's good.
You told me to rotate everything. Don't do everything at the same time, you know, always, and use different exercises. So I could get on this particular machine 170 pounds, whatever that equates to, on the machine for 10 reps solid. Now, if I do that my first exercise of that workout, and I'm only doing 2 to 3 exercises, now next time, say I don't use that machine, and the time after that I come back, let's say it's my second exercise, I'm obviously not going to be as strong. Where do you go with that? How does that equate in then? Because I might not be able to
equate. It's just a totally different number again.
Okay.
So then you would only compare that to when you do it a second time in that session. So when you come to repeat that, you compare the first time you do it to the first time you do it, the second time you do it. I have exercises like that where I'll do chins either second or third exercise in. When I get back to the rotation, I'll only compare my second to my second. You can't compare chinning third exercise in to when you would chin second exercise in.
So you have a lot of logs then. You have various different logs, and I follow you then. Okay.
Yeah, because for my pull sessions, I have 4 different rotations of sessions.
Okay.
And on 2 of them, chin, like I said, chins falls the second exercise on one, a third exercise on the other.
Makes total sense. I get that then. Hey, speaking of people making progress, I saw a recent picture of Sasan that you had posted on Instagram. Man, he's looking thick and lean still, too. Very lean.
He's just amazing. Like, he's being so meticulous and working so hard. His execution in the gym is immaculate.
Sweet.
And he's being patient with his progress, just ticking the boxes, taking a rep here, 2.5 kgs here, and all of a sudden, he, with complete standardized form, he's put like 15 kgs on his lifts and 2 or 3 reps as well on everything. So just the only thing that is being forced in terms of adaptation is muscular.
That's awesome,
like,
man.
He's staying away from the heavy, heavy shit like that I do. So we're trying to keep neural fatigue as low as possible, trying to keep injury risk as low as possible, because I'm used to lifting like that. He's not. So like, where the temptation then is to kind of do some of this stuff like I'm doing, and it's like, no, don't do that stuff. Like, it's not appropriate or necessary considering the goal. Like I have different goals, so I want to do that stuff.
Yeah.
His goal is to place top 6 in the Olympia next year. So we have to just be on it in that sense. And yes, it's just going so smoothly right now.
That's awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting too, because just, I'm interested to hear your perspective as a coach, because everything that you talk about for your program, I assumed that this is what Sasan was doing too. And it's interesting to hear that you've thought, no, this might not be what's ideal for him and for his goals. I like that.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, like, I mean, we've tailored a lot of the aspects around what he can and can't do, which is fine by me, because if it forces me to do something that's a little bit different to what I used to be doing, I'll just get strong on that, and then that'll bring about progress. I'm more than happy to do stuff that's a little bit different and just force myself to get strong on it. Generally, all it is just that he's not doing stuff that, like, sub-5 reps that I sometimes do.
I see.
That's all it is. I just do that because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
That's fun for me. Like, I want to be able to pick up the heaviest shit in the gym. I don't want to be able to press the 220-pound dumbbells. That's the goal. Like, just because I want to be able to do that. Whereas in specificity to bodybuilding, unless you can do it for 10 reps, probably not that relevant.
That makes sense. He speaking of all this too, when we spoke to him, he explained to us how, you know, the methods you use more frequency, less volume, you know, per workout, that it's something that made sense to him. And he found that because of his physical limitations, and he and I kind of have, we kind of both discovered this in the same way for ourselves due to shoulder issues. How do you deal then with, because this is where my frustration is that I'm not always 100%. And I watch your videos at the website. I get pumped up. I go to the gym. Some days my shoulder just doesn't do what I want it to. And
on those days, then the rep range just changes. That's all.
Okay.
Then those sets are 15 to 20, to 30 rep sets.
Okay. That's what I've been doing, man. And then I started feeling like Jordan wouldn't want me to do this.
We know, according to like more relevant literature, that as long as you reach absolute failure, you will eventually start tapping into high threshold motor units. So the potential for maximum hypertrophy, according to some, is that you will be able to grow at the same rate of efficiency as if you would compared to heavy loading.
Interesting.
There are some people arguing that you can actually grow even more efficiently in that sense. As long as you take it to absolute muscular failure.
Yeah.
I'm on the fence with that a lot, because I think that you will never fully get big without some heavy loading. So the idea of saying that you can get just as big without heavy loading is, I disagree.
I think most people, even in theory, would disagree too. You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but on those days where you're beat up, God, it doesn't make a difference at all. Like, if you have to do 20 reps that day, you have to do 20 reps.
Okay. Well, I feel a lot better about that then. Because I felt like, man, I'm a pussy. I'm doing these 20 reps, and Jordan would never have this.
Because there's this thing, like, my Instagram stuff is just a snapshot. Like, we're doing 15 to 20 rep stuff all the time.
Okay.
Like, I just only upload the cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Like, we're working across as many rep ranges as possible.
Okay. Nice. Well, I feel
definitely don't worry about that.
I feel reassured then. Hey, Scott, speaking of Instagram, I just saw you uploaded a video. You were doing a bicep movement on a lat pull down type machine.
Mm-hmm.
We're like a few weeks out now from the show. You are still looking like contest grainy from your back.
My back doesn't, I mean, I don't put a whole lot of fat on my back. That's part of it. But yeah, I'm just taking my time. I'm doing, you know, what we talked about a lot with, in the, podcast with Sasan, you know, taking my time. I'm still, I'm having basically zero carbs aside from what I get from nut butters on non-training days. I'm up, like maybe 2 pounds from the last podcast. So that's like a pound each week overall. But everything's going, I'm having a lot of fun in the gym too. I'm doing some, nice. I'm sticking with all my basic training principles, but I'm winging it to a large degree. And I'm doing whole body, training basically every other day.
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of switch that out and move slowly towards more fortitude training types of things. But I'm recapturing some movements, finding some stuff. Doing some stuff that I hadn't done for a while, which is a lot of fun. But
yeah,
it's kind of funny. Like, this happened last year too, and the thought that was kind of flabbergasted by is that, well, first of all, as we said before, like, so many people just blast into their off season and just you know, they miss their opportunity to gain muscle because they push themselves to high level body fat and poor insulin sensitivity, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, whatever quote unquote magic you could get from a rebound is pretty much, pissed into the wind.
Yeah.
In doing that. And, I just talked to a guy, he will know cause he listens to the podcast about this on Saturday. We had a meetup group here and he's a natural competitor who's just been taking his time in his off season. And I see him in the gym, and a couple times I've looked at him. I said, "Is that him?" I had to double take because he's so much larger than when I saw him when I first met him when he was pre-contest, and it's most of his muscle. And he was asking me the question. It's like, you know, is this? I don't quite get how this is happening. You know, everyone says you're going to have to push and have to take years off to gain muscle mass. And he's like, I know, he's been at this for a while. He's like, I know if I were to diet down now with the muscle that I've gained since the show, I would be at least 5 or 6 pounds heavier on stage just a couple months after. So, but he's taking his time. So he's an example of, he's just sort of flabbergasted by how well he's. But yeah, there's no reason to, like, you know, you just feel like crap if you do that, and along with that comes water retention. And if you're feeling horrible, your body's not going to be doing too well in terms of in a bodybuilding.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of meetups and groups, you're planning a big Fortitude camp coming up just in a couple months, early fall, right? Out in Arizona.
Yeah, I'm doing an Arizona trip. I've been wanting to do this for a little while, go back and see, because I haven't been back for 4 years. I lived there for like a decade. And the weekend before the Olympia was the one that worked. My buddy Mike Gustafson, who I mentioned before, he won the Masters Mr. Universe with WFF NABA about a month or so ago now, I guess.
Yeah.
And he and Dave Henry were two of the people that were, they did like the pre- beta testing for Fortitude training when I was just trying all sorts of stuff. I was like, hey, what do you give this a shot? Like, try this muscle ram thing.
Yeah.
And so he and Dave used to do, so he's been doing incorporating muscle rounds and doing Fortitude training formally. So he's going to be out there helping me. And just going back to this, it's a cool gym. It's called Undisputed. They're mainly sort of an MMA gym.
Hmm.
But they're in a building that was the old school World Gym, which like has a really rich history in Tucson. Tucson actually has a really pretty cool history, bodybuilding wise. It's sort of faded away. People don't know much about it. But that gym, they still have all this awesome equipment. They've got like 3/4 of the good stuff that they had back when it was just a bodybuilding gym.
That's so unheard of for like a fighting gym.
Yeah, he's just like, you know, he doesn't. It's pretty big.
Yeah.
He's got, you know, a full ring and a gigantic mat, and he's actually 2 mats. He can do classes, and he just kept all this stuff. So the thing that's interesting, he doesn't really run air conditioning, I don't think, like even in the summer in Tucson, which I kind of like. You know, I like it because it feels, you know, you're getting a sauna, you know, and a workout 2-for-1 type of deal. But most people don't like that. I think that probably scares them. But the MMA guys, they don't. The thing that I like about it, this is the way I always said it, is like, you walk into a gym like that, and you know, if as a bodybuilder, your ego is like, look at me, I'm the Barney badass.
Yeah.
You're immediately reminded that you're not shit. You're just picking up weights and putting them down again.
Right.
I'm sure you're training hard and you're going after it, but these guys are getting bloody noses and submitting each other. They're if there's something, anything's close to, you know, going to war, quote unquote, these guys are doing it. And but they're so cool.
Yeah.
Just super nice people. So when the gym's empty, because no one wants to go and train when it's so hot, at least for the most part. So the people that are in there are pretty serious about what they're doing, and MMA people, and there's no, like, you know, mean mugging or any of that kind of stuff. It's over there just training, and they're really well equipped. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it was a gym. It was like an hour drive for me to get to, but I go there whenever I could, and. The other places that I trained, my own gym included, of course, are closed, where they just weren't really amenable to this sort of thing. And the David Riley is the owner there, and he's like, "Yeah, sure, you guys got a new room where I can do the talk, and make it happen." So
nice,
be fun.
So speaking, you mentioned Dave Henry. He is going to guest pose at your show, correct?
He's guest posing at Jordan's show and my show.
That's what I was going to say. In Jordan's show as well. That's so cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. So Jordan's first and then mine a couple weeks after that. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
And, and talk about, I mean, like, how incredible he is. I mean, Dave and I were, you know, we're obviously, we're like about 8 weeks out now from the Olympia.
Yeah.
And you know, a little less than that now. And he's just like, fuck, Jesus, criminy. Like, he just, like, it's just like driving a Ferrari.
Nice.
Driving a Lambo, man. He's just like, you, whatever you do, you just a little bit of a turn of the steering wheel and boom. Okay, you just lost 3 pounds of fat. And now I see the detail that normally takes 8 weeks in like 10 days. You know? So, Yeah, it's like almost like it's like this is like it's, I almost feel guilty a little bit. It's like, oh, okay, I didn't do shit. You know, that's just like that's not me. That's not any. I didn't like whip up any new magical strategy. You know, that was a stroke of genius. This is just you know, base pairs lined up in exquisite beauty. You know, nature engineered something special here.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as bodybuilding goes, so. Yeah, that's fun. So yeah, Dave should look especially for Jordan's show. Amazing, because he'll just be like 3 or 4 weeks post Olympia.
Wow.
Yeah.
That'll be awesome, man. That's so cool, and that's great that that he's gonna be a part of both of those shows, and that's cool, man. I'm excited, and I'm excited too for you, because having spent so much time out in Arizona for, you know, getting to go back for this camp, that's got to be exciting just to get to go back there again and kind of hit your old stomping grounds and stuff.
Yeah, it's after I left, I would always hear that, you know, so and so knows who I am or what have you, and it's almost like. Leaving like left sort of a mythical shadow behind, like all of a sudden, like all these people know who I am, or they know of me, and I'm like, I had no idea, you know. So that was kind of bizarre. But I'm also going up, I should probably note while we're sort of talking about events, I'm going up to a Metroflex.
Ooh.
Up in Phoenix.
Okay.
The weekend after the Olympia, just in the morning to do a talk up there and a Q&A with Metroflex. Josh Barnett runs that gym. He owns that Metroflex. He's an old school. Jordan might remember him. He was one of Dante's original high-end DC trainers back in the day. And he played college ball. He plays really well in one of the junior nationals back in his day. And he still competes, too. He's done the Master Nationals at least once in the last 3 years. So he has a really pretty hardcore gym up there. And he coaches folks and so that's kind of a hardcore mecca up in Phoenix area. So
nice,
that'll be fun. Yeah, it's gonna be a fun trip. Busy.
That'll be badass.
Are you going to Olympia, right, Scott? Or
I don't think so. I this whole dieting thing that I've wanted to do, it's just kind of stretched out. I was gonna do a show in August, and I was just gonna do a local show here. And I, you know, I'd been throwing ideas around. I'd been looking at your show down there in Miami. I was talking to Skip Hill about coming out there to Colorado, but things wouldn't line up properly. And you know what? I kind of decided I want to go to the Mecca. I'm going to go out to California, get an Airbnb and stay in Venice and live the dream for a couple days. And then there's going to be I believe it's called the Titans Classic. I'm going to compete in that show.
If you're going to live the dream,
yeah,
I'll lend you my. I haven't sold it yet, but I still have my camper van. You need to live in the parking lot of Venice Gold. That's the dream, baby. Airbnb, you know? No. You need to sweat it out, man.
Okay, well, my definition of the dream has evolved over the years. And it includes Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And...
I want to see the Instagram about the gay for pay that you have to do to work when you're out there.
For my GH to get into the show. Yeah.
That's old school.
Oh, geez. Yeah, so I'm excited, and I'm excited to go out there and, you know, see friends. I really want to meet Dave Kalik in person again. I got to meet him at the Arnold, and I know that he's at Gold's all the time. So, you know, he's out there with all his guys that he trains, and I know he's there every day. So I figure if I head out there like Tuesday morning, I can get there Tuesday morning and, you know, do a depletion workout for, you know, at least a couple days before the show, and you know, just an excuse to go to Gold's basically, and stick around afterwards for, you know, Sunday, Monday and eat some food.
So it's the Gold's Classic, right?
This is, I believe it's called the Titans Classic is the name of the show. Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be about the same time as yours, I think. Right around there somewhere.
Oh, so all the way in October.
Okay. Yeah. It'll be like early mid-October. So.
You're so ready, though, already, man. You're not even, I mean.
Well, I got a little time. I got a little time. I could, you know, my lower back could use some work, and I can get really, really lean, Scott. I'm not going to do this unless I can push my my level of conditioning. You know, I'm not a huge guy, so if I'm going to do this, I'm going to be as lean as I possibly can. So
of course,
I'm going to take it real slow now, and I backed off a little bit. Got about 10 weeks, and, you know, I'll start pushing hard again in another couple of weeks here. But if I can get ready early, you know, and then start loading more calories in and come in fuller, that would be ideal for me. And I just want everything to be right, too. I don't feel like my posing's great now. So starting tomorrow, actually, I'm going to start working with Kenny Wallach every Wednesday. And, you know, just try to get my posing the best it's ever been. I think that'll be a difference maker for me.
Yeah, right on. You're going to go to the firehouse on Sunday and, like, get a bob bowl or something like that?
Yeah. You know what? I have gotten a bob bowl before.
Okay.
What? I'll tell you what, man. They've got great food, like as far as clean food goes, but it's—I don't think it's super exciting. It's more—I mean, I guess—but the who you might run into is the most exciting part, isn't it? About the firehouse.
Of course.
But
you know, it's too bad because you'll be busy with your show, and maybe you want to multitask. But
what's that?
Like Charles Glass is a really nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking of interviews you could do while you're out there.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah, Tito Raymond's out there.
And of course,
Dave and. You know, Dave Bourlay is out there, of course.
Yes,
And, you know, all the people that are there. You know, I think Michael Hearn still trains there.
Yeah.
And there's still a whole host of celebrities. You're going into, like, a hotbed of celebrities still.
That's kind of the plan, too, man. I figure it's like I am going to kind of multitask. I'll definitely bring the recording equipment with me, and I'm going to try to shoot some video for Advices, maybe put a few installments there, you know, from different things going on. So it'll be fun, man. I'm hoping to do more than just compete in the show, you know?
I would love to see you. This is just me thinking, living sort of vicariously and
fantasizing
about it. But it would be hilarious for you to go and like take some of the footage that you see in the Battle for the Olympia videos, like especially like standing next over there in the, where like, they have kind of a deadlift platform,
right,
next to leg presses with the rolling door open where you always saw Flex and Paul Gillette and Chris Cormier, all those guys posing.
Yeah.
And like get some guys standing behind you, you know, looking at you in the mirror. You know, seriously, you got to get some striped Zubas to wear.
Oh, yeah.
And get some, you know, get some guys back there. Go to the posing room too. You can practice posing in that posing room.
Yeah. I find that humorous for everybody who doesn't know what I look like. I am I'm a state level guy. You know, I have no plans or I have no delusions of turning pro in this lifetime. But listen, right. I have a lot of fun with competing. You know, I'll come in at a light heavyweight at 5'7", and you know, I'm just gonna have the best time I can is the game plan. I'm not gonna be competing for you know, a top end national show trying to turn pro or something like that. I have clients that are just so much better than me, and I can live vicariously through them, and I just love doing it, man. So that's what I'm gonna do, is just try to have fun with this whole thing.
If you are so willing. How about this? Because I'm grateful for all that you've done for Jordan and me here with this podcast and otherwise too. I'll pay for a training session with Charles Glass. if you'll do it.
I'll be like,
he'll have you.
Yeah. You don't have to pay for that though, Scott. I so much appreciate that. But if I can set that up, I'd have to do it like Monday, I think. Right. Cause I wouldn't want to do that right before the show.
No, probably. You wouldn't get much out of it because you don't want to decimate yourself right before you go on stage.
Yeah.
You'd learn some cool new angles, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just that's the way you have to do it. Like, if we're doing the battle for the Titan, you could call it the whole video Battle for the Titan, whatever, and there you're doing all the shit that they did in the Battle for the Olympia. You need to drive up to the gym at, like, 3:30 in the morning, you know? Have someone filming you in the parking lot like Mitz used to always do.
Yeah.
That's
so funny you say that, because I actually watched a video the other day of the guys driving up, and I thought of that. Like, I needed some footage of me in like a Lambo just like pulling up to the doors, you know?
Exactly. No, you'll get footage of you in an Uber pulling up, like getting out of some guy's Pinto.
Right.
Yeah, the modern day.
Right.
Battle for the Titan classic or whatever the show's called.
Unless I used your RV, then I could just walk, right?
Exactly. Then it'd be like, you know, you slide the RV door open and, like, you know, you're surrounded by dirty gym clothes and, you know, protein empty, bar wrappers.
Empty tuna cans.
Stagnant shaker bottles.
Whew.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, whoever filming is like, looks in and then takes like 10 steps back to avoid the odor.
Right, that right.
You left behind.
All right.
Oh, man.
Well, onto some serious news. You guys wanna get rolling here? We got a bunch of really good questions this week.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Good.
Muscle Minds is made possible in part by Jordan Peters. If you've enjoyed listening to Jordan today, check out his website, trainedbyjp.com. The site offers over 50 hours of video content covering everything from the most basic approach to training and nutrition for beginners, all the way through advanced anabolic and insulin strategies for seasoned competitors. You can follow Jordan and Corin's blog as they prep for their next shows and have questions answered daily on their forum section. So check out trainedbyjp.com. If you've enjoyed Scott Stevenson's contribution to Muscle Minds, you can learn more about him, his products, and his services at his website, fortitudetraining.net. Those who purchase Scott's book or any of his coaching products receive a free subscription to his message board where he answers questions daily. So check out fortitudetraining.net. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout-outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, I'm going to jump around here a little bit because I thought this one was really interesting, and I really wanted to get the perspective of you guys on this one because I have heard not using AIs. Some people don't like it. In fact, I even heard John Meadows say that he doesn't use an AI. A lot of times he will use Novadex instead, and I know after that there was like a brief little burst in popularity of that idea, and I started hearing other people say that. There was a few people, Justin Harris also said that. Now this is a different situation. This is a question submitted to us over at the Advices Radio message board. And this is by a guy who calls himself Onion. And I'm wondering if that refers to his skin, onion skin. I'd be interested.
News stories.
Yes, that was the first thing I thought, too.
Young and, yeah, that's hilarious.
He says, I'd be interested in hearing Dr. Stevenson and Jordan's opinion on designing a blast like Chest Rockwell. Says that's not his real name. That's his Instagram name, and I believe he's a board member, right, Scott, from a couple of the boards. He uses that name there.
I think that's his online, user ID.
Okay. He says he suggests not using AI to control estrogen. I'll quote his exact wording below. It's a long thing, but he says, basically, he argues that AIs should not be viewed as always required. And so long as proper androgen to estrogen ratio is maintained, there should be no estrogenic side effects, even if your estrogen reads as high based on blood work. He also argues AIs stress the body, even if only mildly. And as a stressor, AIs are negative for growth and long-term health, thus should be avoided. So if your estrogen is giving you side effects from being too high, a better solution than taking AIs may be to increase androgens to get the A to E ratio back to normal. I feel like this flies in the face of everything I know about controlling estrogen. And he cites the exact thoughts below. It's like four paragraphs long. What are your guys' thoughts here? Either of you are welcome to jump in. Please share with me. Yeah, what do you think, Jordan?
It's nice in theory, but I don't think it will work in practice.
Okay.
To be honest, I don't believe for a second that if your estrogen is out of range, you're going to offset that using the drugs that he listed, like Masterol and Winstrol. Like, yeah, you can offset it a touch. I've seen that. I've done that myself. You can offset it a touch. But generally, if your estrogen is out of range, and you're adamant to not use an AI, you cannot roll in that situation. You will have high blood pressure, period.
Ah.
Like, you just will. Like, end of story. Obviously, estrogen is high because you're using something that aromatizes. You'll be holding excess water as a result of just that whole scenario, and you cannot offset that whole water retention with Masterol and Winstrol. So either then you drop your testosterone down if you are adamant to not run an AI. But advocating keeping estrogen out of range and just letting that scenario roll, I don't particularly agree with that. I agree with the minimizing the use of AIs. But sure, I mean, if we can minimize that usage, that's great. But if you're gonna not use AIs, you need to use drugs that don't aromatize. So that's cool. So just use nandrolone and Primal. And then try to just keep your blood pressure in range from the water retention that you might incur from nandrolone. It's fairly simple, but I just think that that's not something I agree with at all, to say that it's okay to let your estrogen roll out of range. I'm not happy with that sentence personally.
What are your thoughts, Scott?
This is a really interesting post. For so many reasons. The last paragraph there, he's talking about the minimum effective dose philosophy, and you know, if you kind of apply this to AIs, just like Jordan said, you know, pay attention to your blood pressure, what have you, that would make sense. The thing that we don't know is what other invisible effects are going on. And some of this is sort of, it's an interesting thing from a scientific perspective, because you've got ranges, and the data exists for what healthy estrogen ranges would be in men if you go above and below those. And some of those, a lot of those things are things you can sense, sexual side effects being a good part of it. But if from a purely scientific perspective, those are in men that may or may not have slightly out of range, maybe hypogonadal. A lot of times they are, if they're high in estradiol at least. But we're not talking about a situation where someone's got, you know, testosterone levels that are 20-fold above the normal range.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the logic behind what he's saying, is that if we're thinking about, you know, balance of testosterone or androgenic to estrogenic actions, then it's sort of the underlying idea of his premise here is that you want to balance those things out. So if you got extra testosterone, it's okay to have extra estrogen, because it's that ratio that may be the most important thing. But that still falls prey to the same violation of external validity, to use sort of sciencey terms, in that there aren't data out there on that either that I know of, at least in humans. There may be some stuff animals that I'm not aware of, but to say
that the idea of it is nonsensical as well. It's like, I can't even see where someone could draw that conclusion that that's okay.
It's minimalizing, because it's just like thinking, well, just these two, the two, just testosterone or I mean, it's just, there's so many complexities there. I mean, what are we talking about in terms of androgenic effects here? Are we talking about through the androgen receptor? Are we talking about non-genomic effects? And those can be variable. And then there's the different estrogen and estrogen metabolites, some of which are toxic. And then some of the estrones are toxic. And then, like, one of the hydroxyestrones has a protective effect against prostate cancer. So there's hidden things you don't know about, too. Let's say, you know, you just let your estrogen sort of climb high, and, you know, you're just sort of, and you're not bothered by anything that you can sense, sort of sides, but you may be producing high levels of, a tumor-causing or a toxic estrogen. So you've got all sorts of estrogen metabolites that are also askew. So yeah, is that kind of what you meant by it's not logical, Jordan?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So there's that, and so it's kind of like, it's a really nice devil's advocate way of addressing. It's like, well, you know, we don't have any data in people with, you know, sky high testosterone to show that that's really the optimal range of estrogen, per se. I mean, but you do obviously know, you know, if you're getting gyno symptoms or you're getting high blood pressure or your sex drive is just awful, that, you know, you probably should address that. And that can be addressed by adjusting an AI. Yeah. Oh, as an aside too, for what it's worth, Novodex's metabolites have aromatase inhibitory action.
Okay, really?
So Nova, yeah, is a it's kind of a combo. I can send you the link for a study on that. But it's both a CERM and an AI kind of built into one.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of a nice twofer.
Interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah, I thought I mentioned it. But so many podcasts, I can't remember where I talk about stuff. But
you know what? There's so much information coming into my head during this show. You may have, and I just true. Yeah.
You talk about lots of podcasts. You're for sure.
Are you familiar with that? How John had said that in the past? It was maybe a year or two ago.
Oh.
He had said he had just used Novadux instead of using an AI, or you know.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan probably saw the same thing. I had an influx of questions about that comment.
Oh yeah,
I've heard that like a couple dozen times. Like, hey, I decided to switch to this because I heard John Meadows say that.
Very influential person, that,
Jordan. Jordan, sorry, did you notice any of that? Oh, can you hear me?
Sorry, I lost you guys. Sorry, say again.
Oh, did you get an influx of questions about using 20 milligrams of Novadex after John mentioned that he uses Nova without an AI?
I did, but I think it was more in the when people are cruising.
Okay.
I think that was when he was using it. And if that individual, I just said, like, just pay attention to your blood work.
Hmm. Right.
And if you are an individual that cruises and you don't aromatize to a crazy extent, and your estrogen levels are like on the high end of normal without an AI, or maybe you can justify them creeping a little bit over, then sure, cool, use some tamoxifen.
Right.
It's a fine scenario.
Yeah.
But it's just not realistic on a blast, in my opinion. You need to have better control of it than just not using an AI.
Okay.
Yeah. But like what that guy said, some of that stuff that guy said does make a lot of sense. Like you said, in terms of keeping your doses minimum and acknowledging that short AIs are a drug that we generally want to avoid, and promoting just using as little as possible so we only have to use minimal AI doses. But I think the message is just somewhat convoluted.
Let me address another important thing that I harp on. So the first sentence of this quoted passage says, an androgen-estrogen ratio in the body's desired range is critical for both quality of life, and he cites Bondarenko, 2000. That's a reference is in Ukrainian. The article's in Ukrainian. I don't know if he speaks Ukrainian. I don't. I couldn't get it, but I didn't try that hard because I don't speak Ukrainian. I guess I could have Google translated, but I'd read in the abstract, it says no correlation was established between serum testosterone levels or testosterone estradiol relations, as well as between sexual dysfunction indices characterizing the state of libido and erection, both in cases of psychogenic sexual dysfunction, blah, blah, blah. So that citation that he uses to say that the desired androgen to estrogen ratio is critical for quality of life doesn't support what he's saying. It actually supports the opposite contention.
Hmm.
And if you read the rest of the abstract, it says only in those cases above mentioned dysfunction related to chronic prostatitis was there a positive correlation.
Hmm.
So for the most part, like that doesn't support his contention. So that's like, okay, so number 9 doesn't work out so well. That's reference number 9. Then he notes, he's talking about estrogen being important for muscle growth. It says, in fact, estrogen itself has many strength and anabolic characteristics. Anabolic. He references Lowe et al., which is a review, and I looked at that review, and then I went to the meta-analysis that's noted in that review. It does not support an anabolic effect of estrogen in that reference. It says, they hypothesize, I think this may be from the abstract, That the mechanism underlying estrogen's effect on muscle strength results from actions of nuclear estrogen receptors that cause an improvement in muscle in the function of myosin. If you dig in there, basically they go to this meta-analysis that indicates the effect of hormone therapy, which is estrogen replacement, on muscle strength by improving the function of the existing muscle, that is, by improving muscle quality, not by muscle hypertrophy. So the second of three references in this passage supports the opposite contention of what he's saying they do. Mm. So, I mean, I'm not trying to like beat him up, but this is this thing that happens is that people just post some references and it's like, well, I don't know how to read that shit. You know, I'm just going to blow past that. It must be good. You know, I'm just finding the references, Googling them in Google Scholar, opening them up and reading them. And then, interestingly enough, in the second paragraph that's quoted in that question on the board, he says he's talking about Masteron, Winstrol, and Proviron. These compounds also tend to have a high affinity for binding with sex hormone binding globulin. And he cites a paper I'll talk about in just a second, which leaves more free testosterone available to bind to the androgen receptor. So that particular reference he uses, so the point he's making, and we talked about this, I think, just last time, in the context of SHBG and the free hormone hypothesis.
Yeah.
The idea being that you want to, that when bound to serum hormone binding globulin, the androgen doesn't have a potential for activity. And I think I mentioned the megalin receptor, which is a receptor that will bring a bound androgen bound to SHBG into the cell. So it's a basically kind of a carrier protein that brings that combination in. So back to his contention, was basically saying that these Masteron, Winstrol, and Proviron are going to tie up SHBG, leaving more free testosterone available to bind to the androgen receptor. That paper looks specifically at Winstrol, that paper actually is support in opposition of the free hormone hypothesis. Once again, and I can go into that, but basically, that's a very cool study. They had people who were normal males, and then they had males who had partial and complete androgen insensitivity syndrome, meaning that they're basically males that are like eunuchs in the sense that they have no sensitivity to the androgen if they're complete or partial. And when they gave Winstrol to those folks, they found that in the normal folks, your SHBG went down.
Okay.
So you give an androgen, the body's going to respond by, and this isn't a complete, this study doesn't prove or disprove anything. This is why this is kind of an interesting area of study, but. You know, there's like basically feedback inhibition or desensitization. You give a steroid, and your body's going to respond by countering the activity. Like that's how drug tolerance develops, for instance.
Okay.
So in the individuals who were normal, who respond to androgens, they had like about a 50% decline in serum hormone binding globulin. In the androgen insensitive individuals, they had no change in SHBG. So the androgen-sensitive individuals, it didn't matter. Well, if you're androgen-sensitive, one way the body, and there is an SHBG-androgen combination that is a way to deliver androgen inside the cell so it can bind to its nucleate receptors and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
And it would make sense when the body's sensitizing its or desensitizing itself to androgens that it would reduce the SHBG so that it delivers less androgen bound to SHBG that's what happened to the normal folks.
I want to just jump in too and say, I don't think we talked about it on the show. I think it was a previous conversation VJ and I had, and then I asked you about it with SHBG. Uh-oh. And that what you were saying was, is that, and just to kind of reiterate for the average guys like me that are out there listening right now, what you're saying is that SHBG might not be binding up steroids to make them unusable, but carrying them, transporting them to use.
It's a delivery protein. It's basically escorting them.
Okay.
Via this megalin carrier protein into the cell.
And that's different. That's different because that's not what we've all, you know, all of us bros out there, guys like me who've read the boards all these years, we've been told that SHBG binds your steroids up and makes them unusable, basically. And it's the free stuff that's left that allows us to grow.
Right. So imagine, so they're measuring SHBG, and I wasn't able to get this. I couldn't even like log into the site for the journal that holds the thing. I logged in, but it was just blanking out on me. So I haven't read the whole study. I just have the abstract, and that pisses me off because I was gonna buy it for like $40 or whatever. But this falls in line with a bunch of other research showing that when you administer androgens, in this case it was Winstrol, you show a decrease in SHBG. Now, if you start to become desensitized to an androgen, testosterone, what have you, and SHBG levels reduce, that would mean more free testosterone. That doesn't make sense in the context of desensitizing to hormone. If your body is going to try to figure out a way to limit those effects, desensitize you, which is what actually happens, you would produce more SHBG.
Hmm.
And this happens with hormone replacement therapy. There's a number of instances. So in this particular instance, they found this. And those individuals who were insensitive to androgens didn't display any change in SHBG. That may be because there are a lot of androgen receptor defects, like genetic defects that create androgen receptor insensitivity. So maybe it's the androgen receptor binding then that causes a change in the liver's production of SHBG. Either way, though, this basically supports the idea that you'll get a decrease in SHBG if you have normal androgen receptor or normal androgen sensitivity, which suggests that if the body is desensitizing itself, it's going to reduce the delivery through that SHBG mechanism.
Hmm.
It's a strong hypothesis, and it sort of makes sense in this context. This isn't to say that direct binding to the androgen receptor isn't important, and that the free hormone not bound to SHBG doesn't have an action as well. But back to why I brought up this shenanigans with the megalin receptor and everything else, is that this person has cited this paper, which certainly doesn't support the contention he's putting forth. This is not supportive of the free hormone hypothesis and using Winnie and Proviron and Masteron to tie up SHBG to make more testosterone available.
Yeah.
So the Winnie reduces the SHBG in a normal person. So you got less of it to bind to tie things up. So anyway, that's sort of my point there. So those three references are sort of, They do nothing to support his idea at all. And I think that's really important. You can get lost. And I put references in all my stuff so people can fact check me, double check me.
Yeah.
And that's why this person would do it too. So I went and double checked him because I'm interested. I want to learn these things.
Sure.
And I'm like, this doesn't work. So for me, This shoots the credibility of what he's saying in the foot. This basically sort of argues against his authority, so to speak, unfortunately. So,
and I understand what you're saying too, Scott. You're not saying this because you are trying to be confrontational, you know, or trying to prove anybody wrong, really.
Yeah.
More so, it's just what the science is telling you. And I appreciate that because honestly, man, I read the stuff and then I see that there's a linked study, and sometimes I read the studies and it just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I think there's probably a good number of other guys out there that are like me in that respect. So I appreciate you kind of doing that research and digging into it and kind of translating it here.
Yeah, that's part of what I do. But this is really important. I mean, you could say that's nitpicking in one sense. He's got a really good message. I think Jordan kind of agreed with it too. Like the minimum effective dose philosophy and paying attention. I mean, the last thing is to start small, increase only when necessary, and take a break when the body giving signs it needs a break. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. That all makes, he just didn't do a very good job of substantiating the idea of just sort of, you know, maintaining this androgen-estrogen ratio. Because, I mean, what would that mean? Like, let's say someone's doing just 3 grams of androgens. And, of course, the androgen-estrogen ratio is a matter of, you know, are you going to have to go and figure out what the androgenic anabolic ratio is of each of these things and somehow put this in some complex equation? I mean, if 3 grams of testosterone is different than 3 grams of tren, or, you know, a gram of tren and 2 grams of deca, sure, or, you know, whatever bizarre things someone might come up with doing. So the ratio is like, it's not going to tell you hardly anything in terms of practically what's going on. But like, if you take your blood testosterone up 20-fold above normal, you then let your blood estradiol go up 20-fold normal. If you don't notice any sides, of course you would, I would think. And people have. I've seen some, like, at least from what they report on the boards, people have like terrible estrogen levels. That doesn't sound like the smartest idea. So he definitely does a nice job countering that with, you know, watch out for sides. And I think the kind of what Jordan said is, if you're paying attention to your blood pressure and water retention, you're probably going to end up adjusting an AI or using NOVA or something to bring yourself back closer to at least what will be the top or just above the top of the range that most people use anyhow.
Yeah.
And there's more to that too. It's like, what about other things that cause water retention that aren't estrogen related? So it's I like the idea, and it's a great double advocate way to look at things, and it makes sense. But it's just like, there's just too many I think there's too many issues with just saying this is a better way to do things compared to the way folks have been.
Right on. That makes sense.
A long ass answer, but I think this is a rich question, man. That's what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. I'll move on to the next question here. What are your thoughts on feet out Smith squats? I like these better than front squats for quads. I feel them the most, and I was wondering if any of you have ever utilized them in your programs. Now, Jordan, I know that you've talked about doing Smith squats before. I'm not sure if he means feet out, if he's talking about having your feet way in front of you. But if so, I feel like that'd be more hamstrings, don't you?
I don't like the sets where the feet are too far in front of you. Yeah, it just puts you in a weak and less powerful position. Like when we talked about before, like my general philosophy on everything when it comes to hand placement and foot placement is to put yourself into a position where you can just get really strong and then just exhaust it. So for me, with the Smith squat, I like to squat on a straight up and down Smith. I don't like the ones that have the comeback at angles. They annoy me. And then I tend to just have my feet fairly underneath my body just so I can load most efficiently. If he's referring to feet out as well, maybe like toes turned out a little bit. I don't know. I think you're probably right. It's probably feet further in front of the body.
Yeah.
Which I see people do that, and I'm like, how is that comfy, or does that feel correct doing that? Like, because at the bottom of the squat, you have just nothing really supporting you. It looks very strange. It looks like if these people went like one more inch deeper, they would just crumble. Because they just have nothing underneath them. Like, the center of gravity is in such a strange place. Smith squatting is great, I think. I think most people can probably build their quads way more efficiently on a Smith squat than they can on a barbell squat. However blasphemous that may sound in regards to barbell squatting being like the king of all exercises, in reality, if you've been doing this a while, you'll know what I mean.
Where are you at, Scott, with Smith squats?
It's funny because that's one of the things I've been playing with is barbell and Smith squats, and I was going really deep on both. And just yesterday, I, using my good old friend the top squat, I did some Smith squats and just went like rock bottom. It's like I felt so much better. than barbell squats. And I'm not, I've given up on barbell squats for that reason, you know, and gone back to them. So I'm not that proficient at them.
Hmm.
It's like I've been doing those for 30 years. I did them for like 12 or 15 before dropping them off a long while ago and then sort of restarting, but felt much better doing those just yesterday. So, which I, it's a lesson I've relearned now how many times, but yeah, the feet out thing, I think he means way out in front. First of all, people never really go too heavy to do those.
Mm.
I don't see anyone, like people are usually like, they got quarters, yeah. 25 pounds on the bar or something like that. It will activate more quad, but, it's sort of asking for patellofemoral pain.
Mm.
A lot of people like chondromalacia type issues. I have a spinoff question for Jordan, because I'm not big on those squats either, just because the knees can get you. But there's an interesting thing, and here's, well, I got a comment and then maybe a follow-up question for Jordan if I don't answer my own question as I'm speaking, which I tend to do sometimes. So there's, get in that power position, get friggin' strong as friggin' hell. And that's going to get you a decade into training at least if you do it like, yeah. You're going to do really, really well. And then, you know, at some point, of course, people, advanced guys will oftentimes have, you know, they'll be really strong, but they'll still have weak muscle groups. And, Dante Trudell, Deep Dog Crap, DC, has talked about getting funky with it. In which case you're going to have to sort of work around the way in which your musculoskeletal system is set up biomechanically and or the way in which you're neurologically wired to press. So like take squats. Like when I was doing squats like religiously, my ass was gigantic relative to my thighs. Because I just that's where I feel comfortable and that's where I was strongest and I just had gigantic glutes. It did help with my hamstrings, but not even so much. Just like a deadlift really is what got my hamstrings. But I have like stage pictures of like these like it almost looks like they've been photoshopped or something. So big relative. I mean, it was great, you know, but a certain way. But my legs weren't where I want them to be. So on the one hand, sort of. Getting to that power position, just getting as brutally strong as you possibly can, makes total sense. That's going to get you through years and years of training. It's going to get you a lot of size.
Yeah.
But then in advanced guys, you may need to find something else. And this is the what Dante Trudell has called getting funky with it and sort of finding those exercises that are workarounds for someone who's biomechanically inclined to rest with their glutes and hams and not their quads, or neurologically they just don't do a very good job of activating whatever muscle group or combination thereof. So you have to do some kind of weird stuff. So this was this is kind of like the, and part of that I think is that what happens is people look at all the exercises you see on, and I'm, you know, in a sense I'm contributing this with the funky ones that I come up with on Instagram. I'll admit to that, is that people want to forego the hard and heavy shit, like what Jordan focuses on his Instagram, and instead they want to go with foo-foo stuff. And so they miss out on just getting brutally strong and getting brutally large and then taking things from there. But Jordan, to what extent do you think that someone can use... would have to like sort of step away and not necessarily use this exercise variation because I just don't like this one because the knee pops. Step away and change up grip width and bring up weak muscle group.
I think it depends on the person's mentality.
Yeah.
I think if someone can really go at it, you'll get to where you want to be musculature wise. I've never had to change. Have you guys ever seen me do a funky stance or a funky grip or a funky foot position? I do everything. I like Scott, you know as well. Like when we've trained, I hate using pieces of kit that aren't the right machine.
You won't do it. I could have the coolest one ever, and you'd never do it.
I'm like, no. I'm like, we're going on the seated row. We are going to put straps on, and we're going to move the stack.
Right.
Like, yep. I can see some people needing to do it. But if you're really stubborn and you just get really, really, really strong in sync with taking your body weight up, obviously, then I think most people can achieve the physique that they want to achieve. There'll be certain body parts, sure, that never quite get there. But I don't know if they're ever get there.
Yeah, that's sort of the root of the of this question is, are those just, is there like a inherent limitation in that muscle, no matter how you bombard it, you know, loading, metabolic stress, whatever mechanism you try to exploit, whatever exercise you try to use, it's just, I mean, like for, I mean, your calves are really friggin' big, but relative to your thighs, they're weak to a certain degree. And it's not from lack of trying, you know.
That's the thing. I what's funny as well is I'm a lot stronger on calf raises than Sass. And Sass's calves are unreal.
Yeah, you know.
It is a fucking crazy. And if we do loading sets for calves, like 10 to 12 rep stuff, like I'm quite a bit stronger. Like he's the same strength as me on the high rep stuff we do. For the loading work, he's three times the size of mine.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think my calves will ever get there. Like, they'll slowly improve, but I can keep getting them stronger and they'll creep up. But I think you'll always have those limitations with certain body parts.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I've got some substantial tears in both of mine now, but.
Yeah.
Before I started having, and that some of that, I mean, the only of the times that that's happened, I've only been aware of like a couple of them, and it didn't seem like I did much. But you know, in retrospect, I did much more than I thought. But actually, once both times were not actually during heavy loading. One was during a stretch. I felt a twing. The other one was doing it. Yeah. Anyway, but I remember years ago when I was doing like a long time ago, I was doing DC training. And doing the DC style calves, which are just brutally fun. If anyone doesn't know about some, we can talk about it sometime. They're just it's a metabolic stress type of thing where you're basically holding in a lengthless position. And I was getting up to like doing those on a leg press with like 10 plates on a side.
Jeez,
it was like, and I was starting to have like low back issues because of just. Like, especially on some, I had to get a pad to put behind my sacrum.
Yeah.
It was just there for so long. It was a three plus minute set sometimes. And my calves still sucked. It's still, I mean, really, it's still like, so it's like, what in the world here, you know? Same thing, you know, I could beat Dave on a lot of calf stuff, but his calves are much better than mine. So I know how you feel, man. I feel your pain. So.
I'm going to go to the next question. I'm just going to do just two more questions today.
Yeah, it's been long.
Yeah. This is an interesting one because it kind of ties into something we were talking about a little bit earlier. This question is from Guru Hanza. He's a big supporter of the program. He loves both you guys. And he says, for all three of you, how much would you hate training? Well, I should probably call it working out, he says. If you were forced to train with Charles Glass for 6 months. It's kind of a lighthearted question here. First of all, Jordan, I couldn't picture it. I just couldn't see it happening.
I don't want to say anything that just comes across as disrespectful to Charles.
Sure.
I mean, he's been doing this for a long time. He'd have seen way more stuff than I've seen. So I'm not even going to be arrogant enough to say that. I would hate it or not enjoy it because there would be some fantastic things that he would be able to offer in terms of insights.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just clearly not the way I enjoy to train. So it would be those type of things. I would love more so to just kind of sit and chat with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love that. Like, it was the same with Milos. I fucking loved sitting there talking with Milos.
Oh, I bet.
It was just brilliant. But again, absolutely no disrespect to Milos because he's brilliant. I just didn't click with the training, which is cool because we all have our own preferences in that way.
Yes.
So it would be amazing to spend some time with Charles and learn from him and talk to him. But I'm not so sure that the training would be for me.
It's so different than what you do. I would be interested to... If you were influenced by him for a period of time, I'd be interested to see how that influenced you.
I mean, like, I've
I've molded my training for a while now, and I've tried a lot of different approaches, and I've spent a lot of time learning from a lot of different people. Where I'm at the place now with where I know what my body needs. I understand my body very well now in regards to training. So I just need to stay on this path, and I know where it can take me in terms of more muscle. But I know I can keep growing if I want to, doing what I'm doing. So with that in mind, considering how long it's taken me to kind of mold this approach, I think I'd regress if I start to do anything else besides what I'm doing now.
For sure. Mm-hmm. That makes total sense to me.
So, again, absolutely no disrespect to someone like Charles. He's been doing this way longer than me.
Yeah.
And would have seen a hell of a lot. So what's inside his head would be phenomenal to access.
What are your thoughts, Scott?
How about you first? He's asking all three of us.
Okay.
Since we're going to make this happen anyway when you're out there.
Yeah, right? It's funny that it kind of tied in with that. You know what? I would be interested to see what he does. I feel like out of the three of us, I probably stand to make the most progress. So I would probably benefit the most out of training with him. I could see some of that working. I've done well with higher volume work in the past. I think that for me, earlier on, when I didn't understand intensity, one way that I was able to bring intensity higher was to increase my reps and to work in higher volume. I feel like now, fast forward a number of years, it's making more sense to me where I can get a lot more work done in a much shorter period of time and be very, very aggressive with it. 5 years ago, I would have been super interested, and I feel like it would have made a lot of sense to me, and it would have pushed me further. At this point, honestly, he wouldn't be my first person to train with for 6 months. But that said, I would probably still grow. I'd probably still improve very well. In fact, I'm positive I would. There's no question in my mind. And no matter what, it's something different than I'm doing now. And you know, basically just like anything, if you do something different, you're going to have a response for a period of time, right? So, plus, if I could live in Southern California and hang with Charles Glass every day, man, my life would just be better in so many ways. It's great now, but...
$1 a day for my van if you'll live in the parking lot and Charles Glass.
I love it. I think I'm going to do that. If I can get Wi-Fi hooked up and do all my podcasting, it'd be awesome. You said to go.
Yeah, you should get the Wi-Fi at the gym. I'm sure they have it there.
Yeah, just pull up close to the building, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you get the, maybe they have set up like the live in the dream parking space for you that only you could use.
Oh, that would be sweet.
Give you the live in the dream member of the month for 6 months.
You're twisting my arm here. I think this could be good. I think this could be good.
You're gonna 9 months from now, you're gonna be a surfer and you won't be doing any podcasts. It's just gonna be like dropping acid and riding waves, and surfing babes. I thought about this as just sort of thinking like, what would this do? And I totally understand Jordan's perspective on this. And what might be really kind of interesting, just go in and take a completely a beginner's mind approach.
Yes.
And I would not. I've already met Charles, and I'm sure he remembers. He's a really nice guy, so I'm sure he remembers meeting me. But I highly doubt that he has any idea, where I am in my bodybuilding, journey and what have you.
Did you have dreadlocks at the time?
No, I did not.
Okay, because I figured you would have had that like mutual connection. At the
never really had dreads. People thought I did.
No, those weren't dreads.
No, I just curls, you know.
I thought they were dreads. That's the way I remembered them, at least. My bad.
A lot of people thought that. No, I never. It's just I had curly hair and it's long.
That curly, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty curly.
I'm going to go back and look.
Okay. My nickname when I was in Germany one time was Pubes.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it was pretty curly. That was one of my least favorite nicknames.
Right, right.
Yeah. It wasn't exactly like a babe magnet. Like, you need to talk pubes. To like my buddy Pubes over here. Why in the hell do you call him Pubes? Like, oh, never mind. You'll just like him. Trust me. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, back to the question. It would be interesting to just go in there and just you know, not lie, but just not tell. Just go with a completely blank slate and say Charles. And I know he doesn't really do much dietarily. It's like, Charles, who's the best person I should talk to? You work best with as far as diet, making sure that's going to be in place.
Yeah.
And like literally just let all that happen. And this is kind of the opposite of what I seek out in trainees. This is sort of a purely hypothetical situation, but it might be fun to just see what he does. And I'm thinking of a scenario like this, like let's say he just switches me to, you know, kind of a higher volume, like a whole bunch of sets, different exercises, different angles, and I just start regressing, you know, or start overreaching and pushing it over. What would he do when basically my genetic limitations make themselves known? What would he do? How would he adjust things? Would he, in over the course of 6 months, sort of migrate by his training philosophy more towards what I found works? And I, you know, Charles is a smart guy, but his renown has come from working with guys with great genetics who can grow from lots of things. But he does work with a lot of folks who can afford him too. You just don't see interviews talking about, you know, John Smith, who's an accountant, you know,
right,
or what have you, who doesn't compete. I think he works with people like that. I'm not positive, but I think he does. So it'd be interesting to see. To like sort of tap into the inner workings of his mind, like Jordan talked about doing in a conversation, just in seeing how he would change things given the responses that my body provided him, or lack thereof, lack of adaptation. And just like, so what happens after 6 months? Did he just keep on, you know, hitting the nail with the hammer and it never went in, or did he, you know, pick another tool that was more appropriate?
Interesting.
Yeah, that would be kind of fun. So, but otherwise, I mean, he's such a nice guy. I mean, I only talked to him the one time, but just a really good dude. So I imagine we'd work something out. I probably would, you know, maybe if I were sticking with the 42 training type of thing, I'd do a couple of days of my training a week or three or four. And then I'd say, okay, now that here's the wild card day, you know, I want to do a full body workout with you on Saturdays. You know, we got to be done in an hour and a half. Kick my ass. And that would probably be a blast, you know, if we worked out some parameters to make it happen. But I had what made me think of this, it was sort of a reversed role, but one thing I learned a long time ago, I was having a knee issue. Yeah. I mentioned this before, maybe on this show. I was having, like, I think it was my right knee. It's just that I had a plica, I believe, which is I mentioned that. And so it's like I couldn't do shit. Leg training was... at least for that leg, was awful. So I went to see this a guy by the name of Vince Black, who is a kung fu master and Tui Na guru. He's sort of semi-retirement, sort of based in Tucson. He was the my people taught me body work, apprenticed under him, and he's kind of the man. Like sort of has this magical, mystical ethos about him. And I went in to see him. I was pretty nervous, and I had never seen him before. I didn't know who he was. I went in, I signed up, you know, and actually one of my fellow students was at the desk. She was a friend of mine too. And I sat down in the lobby, you know, and I was filling out the form and kind of waiting, and we were coming and going, and like either right before I got there or just shortly thereafter, this guy came in and sat down, started reading the paper. And he was just there, and I made some small talk with him, and I got up, and I'm looking at the wall, and I'm checking out everyone's licenses, and looking at the pictures, and these are all people that I know, and I've heard about, so it was kind of cool, and I'm moving around, and then when everything was done, my friend Kathleen calls me back, and they get me ready to be seen by Vince, and the guy that was in the waiting room was Vince. He was watching me. He wanted to observe me in my native habitat.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I've done this before with people quite a few times now.
Wow.
Just looking to see how I moved around, like how much did I really limp?
Yeah.
You know, how much were my biomechanics changed, getting up, standing, walking around, doing things? You know, was I rubbing on the thing? Like, what was I actually doing when not observed, at least knowingly, compared to when I'm in there in, on the table and I'm bitching and moaning and providing him with my complaints?
Right, right.
And I'm like, oh, shit, that's the guy. He didn't introduce himself. He knew who I was.
Right.
Entirely. This was part of how he does his assessment. So back to Charles Glass, that's what would be interesting. It would be a reversed role. I would go in literally covertly observing Charles Glass to see how Charles Glass addresses me. Like, ah, does he do this? Did he see that, you know, we had to drop from 2 plates or 2 1/4 plates to 2 plates on these hammer machines in order to stay in the rep? Is he noticing my strength loss?
Yeah.
He doesn't log those things, but is he paying attention? Has he got, like, you know, this idiot savant, like, calculator up in his head that's capturing all this information, and he's sort of you know, artistically changing things, or is he missing stuff that's really obvious to me?
Yeah.
So that's what I was. That's why that idea popped into my head. Like, see, get an idea of how genius manifests, or if it would. So it'd be fun.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Real quick, this question is in response to one of the earlier discussion you guys had on the radio about what you would do different if you could start over again. Jordan answered that he would use less AAS. Jordan said that using less AAS in the beginning and not so soon would have prevented him from needing higher doses later. Can he expand on this? If one uses higher doses in the beginning without proper experience, can they still come back to make good progress on those same dosages given their experience level, training, intensity, diet structure, and emphasis on recovery are all dialed in? Or is it more like one of those scenarios where once you've used that trump card, you will unfortunately need to keep increasing the doses?
No, you won't need to keep increasing if you do eventually dial it all in, but obviously if you dial it all in on the least possible, you can eke out more in that early phase and probably really then test and see exactly what you can get out of the least.
Sure.
So then you only then do really increase when you truly need it. So you could probably end up being on 20% less drugs by the end of what you had to do to reach your goal. Maybe even a bit more, who knows. But try to use the least as possible and be as patient as you can with it.
We had even talked last episode, I remember, Jordan, you know, we were talking about clients that may come to you that, you know, it was a similar type question that may be using more gear than you'd suggest. And you said you've still found really good success dialing them back, yeah, sure, suggesting less, right?
Yeah. You're still making great progress. It's not like you sabotage your whole, like, future progress. But just if I could make one change, like I originally said, I would have just used less and tried to eke out more out of as little as possible.
Hmm.
And basically, I'm still trying to do that now. Hmm. Like, in this prep, I'm using I'm just being as patient as I can possibly be.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't put any of my orals in aside from just Anavar on a training day pre-workout only. Like, I'm holding back on using clenbuterol. Like, I'm just trying to use all these tools at the right time. So just the longer you can hold back on these things and get to where you are without having to use them, when you do use them, you're going to really, really see the difference.
I think that makes total logical sense. I'd imagine you'd have to agree with this, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the root of the question is whether you sort of blow out your androgen sensitivity with high dose, you know, and in a way that you, like, sort of permanently damage yourself to the effects of lower doses. And, you know, the other piece is everything else that, like, as Jordan said, like, someone who might do that might have grown really well, but then they bypass the learning process that comes from knowing how much that food is very important, that sleep is very important, that auto-regulating your training and adjusting your training, all the training variables is important too. What I have seen before is guys that will sort of, and they, sometimes they can be the folks who are pretty OCD about things, is they develop, and it's then with that goes some body dysmorphia as well, you might say, is they develop sort of this fear of dropping their dose down that they're going to like, they're going to wither away. And, you know, you will, and that can indeed happen. You're not going to, hold all the muscle mass you had on a massive dose of gear necessarily. But if you keep training hard, and this is like the back and forth that has sort of differentiated, I guess, what you might call the guys who are the real bodybuilders, so to speak, or just the guys who love training and love the pursuit versus and who use whatever supplements they're taking as a tool versus those who are looking and enjoy the process versus those who are kind of just shooting for the, I want to be the big guy and kind of be strut around. They want the glory in the end product as opposed to enjoying the journey.
Hmm.
And if you realize that, you know, I can still train when I'm not loaded up.
Yeah.
And I still hold a lot of muscle and, you know, it's depending on their circumstances. It's not like, if I stop now, there will never be a they have this hoarding issue, like there will never be another chance to use to get back to the size or what have you. Then there have been guys that they'll just stay on and they'll go nowhere because they never come off and they don't progress either because they're not taking any breaks and then probably the toxicity catches up to them. It could be several weeks.
Sure.
So there are a lot of a lot of older guys sometimes were competitors early on who then like take a break and they just like to have a family. They raise their kids, they have priorities in life, but they still go to the gym because they love training.
Yeah.
And then they come back, they want to train. I really want to give this another role, you know? Yeah. And they grow tremendously well. And they had a long break. So they definitely didn't blow out their insulin or their sensitivity, androgen sensitivity.
Yeah.
I feel like it's dinner time. I throw the plates in the glass around.
I think so.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. I'm slagging over here.
Yeah, so anyway. Yeah, it's not a. Yeah, you'll be just fine. You can grow after that. And not a problem.
I think that's really good news. And I feel like, some people, they find gear before they find their education. And I mean, I feel like a lot of people just start doing what they think they should do and then learn better later, So I think it's great news for a lot of people, and including myself. I mean, I've used less gear in the last couple of years than I had in the past, and it doesn't seem to be affecting my progress at all. So I can say I can attest to the truth of all this.
Right on.
Well, guys, we should wrap up here because, like you said, Scott, it looks like it's dinner time over at Jordan Corin's house. People will probably not be aware of this, but we had a ton of technical issues. So I want to thank both of you guys for hanging in there today because we've been put through the ringer. A palava? Is that what you call this, Jordan?
It was a palava, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, for Jordan Peters, Dr. Scott Stevenson, for fortitudetraining.net and trainedbyjp.com, I'm Scott McNally. This has been another episode of Muscle Minds Bodybuilding Podcast. Guys, we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, guys.
Voices Radio.